Thank you. I am Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I don't know what would be so special about getting to hear Chuck C. You can't keep from hearing it. You're beautiful. I've heard many, many people throughout the years trying to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for their lives. But how can you do that? How can you do that? I never saw such a beautiful bunch of people in my life as you are. And I would like to have words to thank you and thousands like you for the fact that I'm standing here and breathing in and out. Thank you. That's what I check every morning when I think I've come through. And if I'm breathing in and out, I'm very grateful. Very grateful indeed. And I have the feeling, feel true, that our people, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and the families of alcoholics, are probably the most grateful people on the face of the earth that we have gone through the crucifixion, self-imposed, and the resurrection. We come nearer duplicating what this particular season is all about than any other segment, I believe, of humanity. It's most interesting to me that in order for us to be able to live, those of us who are like me, alcoholics, we have to die first. No way to keep from it. We got to. Because we had our day at running our own lives. I had 43 years to run my life, during which time I was the master of ceremonies and the star of the show. And at the ripe old age of 43, I'd run the whole business into the snake pit. I was a failure in every department of life. As a failure as a husband, a father, a businessman, a man, and a drunk at 43. And that's all the departments I had. If I'd had any more departments, I'd have failed in them too. But that's all I had. Now you might wonder how a guy could fail as a drunk. It's my opinion that any drunk who cannot buy whiskey with money is a failure as a drunk. I had a favorite liquor store. It was on Pico Boulevard, just west of Beverly Drive in Beverly Hills. I lived in Beverly Hills to the very worst of my drinking and the first 11 years of my sobriety. And my favorite liquor store was Vic's on Pico Boulevard. Now, Vic was a very good friend of mine in my early deterioration. And later on, I think he cooled off a little. I went in there in my dying days for a bottle of whiskey. I had money in my hands, and I didn't owe him nothing. Matter of fact, I had been there in time to help him open the store. And when he got there, we got the store open, and he came in and walked around behind the counter, and instead of reaching for my bottle, he folded his arms just like this. And he looked at me and he says, "Chuck, get the goddamn hell out of this store." He says, "I am not going to watch you die any longer. I've sold you the last bottle of whiskey I'll ever send you. Get out of here and stay out." And I thought he was the most ungrateful man that I'd ever known. I'd paid off the mortgage on his store. I'd put his kids through school. And I'd helped him open up right along. And he runs me out. Now, I think if you can't buy whiskey with money, you're a failure as a drunk. So I failed in all departments. For which I take the credit. I take all the credit for the first 43 years of my life. I take absolutely no credit for the last 33 years. And Dick, although he didn't know it, helped me a little bit in coming here after 25 years of drinking. He hurt my feelings. But he also made me think a little bit. And so he was one of the reasons that I finally got here. One of the things that I have been considerably concerned with for some little time is that so many of our people in Alcoholics Anonymous seem to be coming up with the idea that our fellowship is a self-improvement society. Self-improvement. And it bothers me. I get lots of calls, and I make lots of meetings. And in many areas of the Southland, I find that our people are very diligently making fourth and fifth steps about every week or 10 days. Many of them should be getting writer's cramp Because every time they stump their toe, they run home and write 17 pages about their feelings. Then read it to their sponsors, if their sponsor don't happen to be me. Most of my telephone calls, not most of them, but a lot of them, are from those who are just entering or just dissolving a what they thought was a very meaningful relationship. And they're either flying high or they're very low. Depending on whether they're entering or dissolving. Now, I heard them talking about relationships for a bit before I realized what they were talking about. And for those of you who are old as I am, which I don't see any, a relationship is another word for sucking up. And I am not one who believes that this is the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't find it to be played up as the primary purpose of this program. So I have taken one 12 step, one 4 step. I've taken one 4 step, that's what I'm trying to say. Written inventory. And I have taken one 5th step, which I share with God, myself, and another human being. And that's all I've ever taken. And I suspect it's all I ever will take. I have never felt the necessity to take another 4th and 5th step. Although I have read much in the grapevine and other places. Sort of tending to encourage us to take a lot of 4th and 5th steps. I don't believe that I could not only stay sober, not stay sober, but I don't think I could live too long if I were continuously reliving what I lived for the last dozen years that I drank. One time through, that's enough. Matter of fact, one time through, that's almost too much. And so, to continuously be in the self-thinking deal, analyzing our feelings and hurts and foibles. I haven't got time for that. And I wouldn't do it if I had time. I don't know what's necessary for people who do not work with wet drunks. Maybe they have to go and write and test inventories and all that stuff all the time. I don't know. I never was in that category. When I discovered that I was without a drink or a pill for 6 months, I started trying to give this thing away. And I've been trying to give it away ever since. And so I don't know what's necessary if you don't do that. But if you do that, you are in a continuous fourth and fifth step and don't even know it. You're in a continuous fourth and fifth step. Because you see, everybody that you talk with, every new person that you talk with, offers something new, reminds you of something different in your drinking life, which you share. And it's just a perfectly natural thing. You don't even think about a fourth and fifth step, but it's a continuous thing. And I think that's one of the great good fortunes of those of us who are active and stay active in the society. We don't have time to concern ourselves about us. Self-thinking, in my opinion, is insanity. That's what got me here in the first place. I want, I don't want, I like, I don't like, I yay, 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 yay. That's what got me here. And I think that the reason that I am living in almost total freedom presently is because I don't have. I want, I don't want, I don't like, I yay, 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 yay. I don't have it. Much. Once in a while, I get a little resentment. Two or three people have asked me since I got here, did you get over your resentment? And I said, well, I'm here. It wasn't much of a resentment, though. It's just that I didn't want to move. I was pleased with that other place over there. But I'm glad so many of you found this one. And I'm glad to be here with you. You see, if we apply the first nine steps of our program to us, me to me and you to you, for one thing and one thing only, and that is sobriety. Not for self-improvement, for sobriety. Something happens to us. Something happens to us. The first nine steps of our program are designed to surrender us, to squeeze us out of ourselves, to get rid of the I want, I don't want, to rid us of the human ego, which has been our problem from the beginning. That's what it's for. And I think that many of us miss it. I get accused once in a while of being overboard in the spiritual angle or side or whatever. I don't believe that I have ever heard anybody from any podium in Alcoholics Anonymous get more spiritual or say more things about the things that need to happen to us if we're going to stay sober than the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never heard a speaker lay it on the line like that big book of ours does. Bill himself wrote there in the early part of the book, we came to see that either God was nothing or he was everything. Everything. You know. And so I believe that our freedom comes from surrender. And surrender comes if you get here without being surrendered when you come. It comes by applying the first 9 steps of this program to ourselves for sobriety only. Now, just a moment on this. I had about as good a set of related disorders as it's possible to come by. Related disorders. I had no home, no job, no health, no sanity, and no money. Now, I think that's a pretty good set of related disorders. Besides that, I couldn't walk. My good wife, after 20 years, was divorcing me. And as I've said before, without cause. I gave her 20 of the best years of my life. And here she was divorcing me. Our kids, one of whom is here at this meeting today as an observer. I asked him when he came. If he was here as an observer, if he wanted me to give him an application. He claimed he was an observer, and it's all right. But our kids wouldn't even come home when I was around if they could help it. My boss man had sent word to the house that if I ever stepped foot in the plant again, he was going to throw me through the window. And the window that he had picked out don't open. Play glass. I had a nice bunch of related disorders, but I never spent 5 seconds on any one of them. Not 5 seconds. And all of my related disorders disappeared along with my obsession to drink, and I did not know when any of them left. I didn't know when any of them left. I discovered that they had left after they had been gone for varying periods of time. So I think the sooner we can get over the conditions on sobriety, the sooner we're going to find freedom in this program. To get rid of conditions on sobriety. The conditions that just keep us tied up all the time. For instance, last night I was in Tehachapi Prison. For peace up there. And I had quite a few people in front of me. I don't think any of them were under, say, 25, probably 30, and from that up to 50. And they were all up there without permission to leave. They were being detained without their permission. Now, every one of them, very likely, think they're in there for a bum rap, you know. Maybe there's a few of them that don't feel that way, but most of them do. They had a misfortune. There were many, many, many people, drunker than they were, the night they got caught. But they got caught, you know. Or the judge gave them he was mad the morning that they appeared. And I was talking last evening about what I'm talking about now. I do not believe that there's enough intellectual knowledge on the face of the earth to get one alcoholic sober and keep him sober. I do not believe it. I do not believe this is a self-improvement society. If you and I could have improved ourselves, we'd have done it a long time ago. And it wouldn't be necessary for us to be members of this leper colony. There's only one reason that I am not drunk today. Just one. Except rest of life. Never shall. There's only one reason that I'm here. Sober. Just one. And that reason is that I have what I was looking for in the bottle. I have got the thing I was looking for in the bottle. Now, what is the thing? I'm not fighting me or you or life or God or the devil. I'm at peace with me and with you and with my very own God. And that's the only reason I'm not drunk. 33 years and a couple of months has not changed the facts about my life. I am an alcoholic. And that means to me that I cannot successfully drink whiskey. And it means to me that I cannot of myself keep from drinking whiskey. And my years in this society has not changed that fact. That's the way it was when I got here. That's the way it is now. If I felt right here like I felt right here 33, 35 years ago, I would be just as drunk right now as I was 35 years ago. Just exactly as drunk as I was. My only hope to live one day at a time and enjoy it as I have been doing for such a long time is that I so perform that I'm comfortable right here. When I got to this society, most of us felt if we hadn't had a drink today, we were sober. We heard much about putting the plug in the jug, put the plug in the jug, you know. And we still do. And, of course, sobriety is built on putting the plug in the jug. But that is not sobriety. Sobriety is built on that. As a matter of fact, I was an old hand at putting the plug in the jug when I got here. I was a periodic for the last dozen years I drank. And after every drunk, I put the plug in the jug. For keeps. That was not my problem, putting the plug in the jug. My problem was taking the plug out the jug. Because when the time come, out of state, you see. So I agree that you can't get sober drinking. We got to quit drinking. We got to put the plug in the jug. And that is the foundation for sobriety. But sobriety is fourfold. It is physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. and it adds up to the ability to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with oneself. And anything short of that, in my opinion, is partial sobriety. If there is just not drinking today, that's all we had to have in order to live in this life, I would not be here today, this afternoon talk. I wouldn't be here. Because, you see, I lived for varying periods between drunks for 12 long years and then drank again. I was physically as dry as I am right now between every two drunks for 12 years. And I could look at my record with physically sober eyes or dry eyes. And still I got drunk. The insanity of alcoholism is not that we do insane things whilst drunk. It's that we do insane things whilst undrunk. Like me, looking at a record between drunks with physically sober eyes. And being able to kid myself into believing, right up until my last drunk, that I'd learned my lesson. I've learned my lesson. Next time it's going to be different. And it was. It was worse. But I kept doing that until my last drunk. Now there's another thing that I've got to throw in here that I cannot believe. Up until my very last drunk, it was never my fault that I drank. Never. Now, I would think that in 25 years, one drunk would be my fault by accident, if nothing else. But I always had a perfectly legitimate reason for getting drunk. One of them is sitting there. But the last chip out so far, I came to see that if there be fault, it's mine. If there be fault, it's mine, and I've never had to drink anymore. So, if it was just a matter of losing the bottle, I wouldn't spend the time that I spend in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know what happens to us when we do the best we can to do these simple things one day at a time in all of our affairs. I know what happens. Because it happened to me. But not until I had died to self. Had I had to consciously surrender the first time, I would have died without coming to this program, and there's no doubt in the world in my mind about it. In 43 years of life, I never admitted defeat one time, not once. And so I had to get here like I got here. And I actually thank God for hell. Because on my last trip out, the bottle surrendered me. Sometime between the Friday before Christmas, 1945, and a bit after the middle of January, 1946, which time I only knew had passed because of the calendar. Because I was in a state of drunk. I mean, plum drunk. I was blacked out. I don't remember anything that happened that time. And sometime during that blackout, everything between me and me burned out. And I got to this program wanting nothing for me. Not anything. Not life. Or health. Or sanity. Or money. Or anything else. All I wanted to do before I kicked off, which was imminent, was to rub out as much of the record as good before I died. There are many, many people in this audience who lived with people like me and who knew that we didn't love them, just like my family knew I didn't love them. My wife said to me probably 500 times, "Chuck, if you loved us, you wouldn't do these things, you know." And how in the hell could I tell her it was because I loved her that I did? Now, you don't sell that bill of goods. Nobody but an alcoholic could understand that now, I don't think. But you see, I was dry between every two drunks for a dozen years. And I can look at my record. And I knew I was crucifying my wife and the kids. I knew it. And I would have given anything if I could have taken them in my arms and told them, "Look, kids, I'm sorry. I love you. I'll never do these things again as long as I live. So help me." I'd have loved to do that. But I'd already done it. And I knew I was going to get drunk again because I didn't know how not to get drunk again. And I'd get to hurting so bad right here. Now, I'm not drinking at the time. I'm dry at the time. I'd get to hurting so bad right here, I'd have to go get a bottle and get drunk all over again to get rid of that hurt. So I just had to go ahead crucifying him until I crucified me and died to self sometime in that 4 or 5 week period. And I came here to find a way not to drink today for as many days as I had, which were numbered, so I could rub out as much of that record as I could before I kicked off. And for the first 5 years, maybe six, of my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, my reason for doing what I was doing was rubbing out a record. And after either 5 or 6 years, I discovered that I was never alone anymore. That I had a God of my very own, and wherever I am, He is. And from that time forward, I changed the statement, rubbing out a record, to helping God's kids do things they needed to have done because I wanted to. And that's all I've done since I got here. The first 5 or 6 years to rub out a record. The last years just to help God's kids do things they need to have done because they want to. And everything that I beat my brains out to get, from 13 to 43, and ended up without, is now mine in spades. Any dream that I had as a kid, it's mine. And it just came out of doing what I just told you that I've been doing. I call it going about my father's business that's helping his kids do things they need to have done because they want to. And I say that is my business. And it's his business to take care of me. That is not my business. I have spent no time trying to take care of me. My physician tells me that I shouldn't be with people like you. That's what he tells me. You smoker. Everything in me announces that the first two words of the Lord's Prayer mean what they say. Everything in me, that from the top of my longest hair to my toenail, is totally convinced that those two words mean exactly what they say. Our Father, God. Now, if God is our Father, and I think He is, then we are His kids, which I think we are. Whether we like it or not, whether we believe it or not, even if we deny it, we can't change it. We're God's kids. And if that be true, you can let your imagination go crazy, and you can't even catch up with yourself. You hear me? You can't even dream up what it would be like if it were true that God is our Father. Let your imagination go crazy and you'll be far short of the reality of this thing called life. It is my total and complete conviction that every one of us, before we can enter into what our book says is normal for us, if we live this way, I think we have to surrender. I think we have to get out of our own way. I think we have to lose the necessity for self-thinking. If you and I actually take the third step, we are no longer our problem. We're His problem. If I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, there is no room for self-concern. Self-concern says only one thing. Sure that you don't really understand this problem as well as I do, so I'm going to have to get you some outside help. Maybe you're going to join up with some of the doctors who believe that our disease is caused by a librium deficiency. So we got to get him some outside help. Self-concern. Self-concern actually creates a condition that you're trying to get rid of. Actually creates it. Old Job said it like this. He's a friend of mine. We grew up together. He says, "Lo, that which I feared has come upon me. And lo, that which I feared came upon me too. And did for me what I couldn't do for myself." It did me in. So, I think it's absolutely necessary to us that we go through the death that supposedly happened on Good Friday, and the resurrection that supposedly happened today. I think it's necessary for all of us. I think that the only roadblock between you and me and you and your very own God is the human ego. The only roadblock there is. There is none other. But it's enough. You don't need any more. I walked alone for 43 years. I cannot remember when I was a part of life. Up until 33 years ago. I cannot remember. I was a rebel from the day I was born. And I didn't want to be a rebel. I wanted so much, as all alcoholics do, to be a part of this thing called life. And I was always on the fringes. I always walked alone. Because I could not fulfill the first condition, which was surrender. I tried hard, but it didn't happen because I couldn't get out of my own way. And therefore, I thank God, as I told you a little bit ago, for hell, because it burned out in my last period, my last drunken period. It burned out. And again, it has to happen to all of us. That's the only roadblock there is. The feeling of conscious separation from, which is the best definition of the human ego you'll ever hear. I know, because it's mine. Now, the problems of many of those who are here might be a little bit different from mine, but the answer is all the same. The answer is all the same. Problems are a little bit different. You and I both know that there are a number of societies who are using our program with our permission. There's Al-Anon and Al-T. There's Fatters Anonymous. There's Gamblers Anonymous. I'm getting a face made at me over here. This is not the first time she's heard me say that, either. There's Gamblers Anonymous, Addicts Anonymous, Neurotics Anonymous, Mental Health Anonymous. All of them using our program with our permission. And all of them that use it finding answers. The problems are all a little bit different, but the answers are all the same. Now, the problem is conscious separation, and the answer is conscious unity. In him, I live and move and have my being. And the conscious awareness of this is the difference between hell and heaven. Now, I play games with myself all the time. Because I don't believe that any of us can afford to be serious about ourselves. I was serious about me for 43 years. Now I am quick to tell you, meaningfully, from my standpoint, that of myself, I'm not worth the powder to blow me to hell. Of myself. But with this great thing, whatever it is, fulfillment, peace, and joy. And that's the essence of our program. That's what our program is all about. Self-discovery, not self-improvement, is Alcoholics Anonymous. We uncover and discover the thing we've been looking for all our life. Now, I play with a lot of little ditties to stay consciously aware of that all through my waking time. And I want to tell you a little about that, and then I'll quit. Don't want to quit too fast. The wonder of wonder is, as I stood here and talked to midnight, on the way home, I'd tell you the thing that I wanted to say that I didn't say. So I'm not going to get even, no matter how long I talk. But I've fooled around with the Lord's Prayer a little, you know. I have changed it a little, but I'll tell you about that too. I change everything that I don't like. I changed my own 11th step in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't like all that verbiage. So I get up in the morning and I say, look, Dad, I'm reporting for duty. Now I'm going to move it around. I'm going to do the best I can with what I got. And all I want out of you is a little guidance and direction, power to carry it out. Sure, thank you. And I go about my business. I don't wait until he taps me on the shoulder. I go about my business in total expectancy of guidance and direction, and I did it. So I changed the Lord's Prayer a little too, and St. Francis too. But don't forget, I'll tell you about all of them. I like to play with this thing, the Lord's Prayer. We've said it a lot together, you know. And the first several months, I think, that I was in here, it was meaningless to me. After 6 months, I made my first discovery, and that was that I was sober. Hadn't had a drink or a pill for 6 months. And it was only then that I started looking at step number 3 and step number 11. Only then. Because I did not have a very good opinion of me. As a matter of fact, I hurt my guts. That's what it did. And I didn't think it was cricket to even believe that I could give what I thought of me to anybody, let alone to God. I just let it lay. But when I discovered that I'd been sober for 6 months, I started trying to figure out how to make this thing meaningful to me. And having listened to you and even stood with you the Lord's Prayer for some time, I started playing with the two words, Our Father, trying to make them meaningful to me. And they worked. And I finally came one day to see that I was a father. I'm a father. And I said to me, what would these kids of ours have to do to make me never want to see them anymore, you know? Because I'd been taught to the end of a black snake whip that you either got saved or you went to hell. You got here struck out in the outfit that I was born in. It had something to do with the original sin, whatever that is. The best definition I've ever heard from it, from the outside, came from Mary R., one of our people. She thought that the reason we got kicked out of the Garden of Eden wasn't because of the apple on the tree, it was the pear on the ground. Kidney couple, kid. I don't even believe that. I think it was we ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which is duality. Duality, and that kicked us out of the Garden of Eden. But anyhow, I got to try to figure out what the boys would have to do before I'd want to send them to hell. And I started concocting the most heinous crimes that I could make up in my own mind, and laying them on those boys. And I'd say, if they did that, would I want to send them to hell? Never see them again. And I'd have to say, no. So I'd build another one. And I could not come up with anything that would be bad enough that they could do that would make me want to send them to hell. And I said to me, if I, an evil man, can't do that, then God, who is good, couldn't do it either. And I got totally comfortable. Totally comfortable. And then I thought, well, I've got to do something with step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and power to carry it out. And I sat down in the chair that I sit in now, a chair that I sat in for 10 years in hell and 33 years in heaven, and it's beginning to look like it. Mrs. C. now is making noises like she wants to get rid of it. And if I don't let her get rid of it, she's got to have its face lifted. Because it's a mess. But anyway, I sat down in that chair and I said, it says thought through prayer and meditation. Now, I'm going to meditate. And here I sit, ready to meditate. And I've got me a Grand Central head. And I can meditate for sour apples. Because I can't hang on to a thought for a split second. They just go in and coming in every way. And I get mad. I just can't talk through prayer and meditation. And I get at it again, and I couldn't do it. And finally, in a little period of sanity, I guess, two verses popped in my head from the ancient past. One of them was there when the guy called to the carpenter who was walking down the road there one day. And he says to him, good master, good master. And the carpenter man walks over to him and he says, why callest thou me good? There's none good but one, and that's the Father. And I says, uh-oh. And then right on top of that came the next verse. It was sometime later. And this chap says to the carpenter man, he says, say, Bob, he says, you're doing some pretty fancy didos. How do you do these things? And the carpenter man says to him, go peddle your papers. I don't. Of myself, I can do nothing. It's the Father within, He doeth the work. And I says, uh-oh. If that's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. And it all left. I've had no trouble with any of it since then. It's not I, but the Father in me, He doeth the work. And then I got to thinking about the admonition after I'd been sober quite a little while. It was after I'd moved to the beach. And that was when I was 11 years sober. And I was wondering, what was the meaning of praying without ceasing? You know, that's what they tell us to do. Pray without ceasing. And I was thinking, how are you going to do that when you're out in the busy world and you're teaching school? Or you're an attorney? Or you're a businessman, or something. How are you going to pray without ceasing? And I'm sitting there in my big chair looking out the window. It was a weekend because I was still going to the office, and this was a daytime deal, and I saw coming out from behind the corner of my big window a whole bunch of snowbirds. Snowbirds, for you land lovers, are a certain size sailboat, little sailboat. And here came this bunch of snowbirds. And they just kept coming, and there must have been about 100 of them. And it was obvious that they were in a race of some kind. And I'm just there idly watching them. And pretty soon it dawned on me that every one of those boats was going a little bit different direction. And there was only one wind. Did you hear me? All of them going a little bit different direction, and only one wind. One God and Father of us all. And all of us going a little bit different direction. And a little verse popped into my head that I'd known since I was a child. I don't know where it came from, but this is what the verse says. Some ships ply east and some ply west by the self-same wind that blows. 'Tis the set of the sail and not the gale that determines where it goes. And I knew what it meant to pray without ceasing. It means that we should constantly be aware that in Him we live and move and have our being. The conscious awareness of the living presence of God. As our book says, He's either nothing, He's everything. And of course, He's everything. And to be consciously aware of this is the difference between hell and heaven. And that's when I started playing with these things. And I got to playing with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. Our Father, Mother, God. Creator of all things. Father of all life. In whom we live and move and have our being. Hallowed be thy name, blessed, beautiful, wonderful, magnificent be thy name, the name of the Father, God. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Let us so live that our insides and our outsides match. We have a very beautiful line in our society that covers that. That we walk like we talk. Let the inside match the outside. Let's be whole, not divided against ourselves. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And I love this. This day, because the second greatest lesson I've ever learned since I met you people, and you told me this the first meeting I ever got into, is that I have no past, I want no future. This is my day. It's the only day I'll ever know. One day at a time. And that's what this verse says. One day at a time. It says, give us this day our daily bread. And it don't say a thing in parentheses out here. Too crust to wake up on tomorrow morning. That's what we say. You know, and we get all piled up, thinking there's not going to be enough for tomorrow morning. He's as good as this day, our daily bread. And he can do that because this is the only day there is. There ain't no more. This is it. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Uh-oh. As we forgive. Now, if you're sitting here with a resentment, throw it in the pot. Because we gotta forgive. Or we're not gonna be forgiven. That's what he says. He didn't say, forgive me for stuff I'm holding out on you. Or my neighbor. He says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So we forgive. As St. Francis says, for it is in forgiving that we are forgiven, you know. So we got to forgive. There's nothing in me that thinks that God necessarily is going to forgive me when I won't forgive you. There's nothing in me that even wants to believe that. It actually isn't fair, you know. So, when we look and see plainly that God is our Father, then we have to believe that we're all His kids. And then we have to believe that each of us is doing the best he can according to his life. That is, according to his understanding. That the murderer has to murder just as you have to drink. Because of the obsessions of the mind. And we see that when we know better, we do better. Because now we don't drink. We don't drink. We don't have to. We do better because we know better. You see. So, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation. Now that's the one I changed. I knew when I was that high that if there was a God, he could not lead me into temptation. I have never been able to believe that there would be a God any place that would try me to see whether or not I loved him enough not to, well, not to. I do not believe that. So I don't believe that there's a God any place that could lead us into temptation. And that gave me a lot of trouble. There's a lot of other things that I've been taught gave me trouble until I found a solution to it. I found two, as a matter of fact. One of them I found in St. James on the first page of the book. In the book with the gold letters on it. And it says there, if you are tempted, do not say, I am tempted by God. God cannot be tempted by evil, neither can he tempt any man. If you are tempted, it's because of your own desires. Now, I can go right down the road with that. But I can't go afoot with a God that would tempt me. So I started saying it long ago. To myself, I still say it with you, like you say it. But in my own head, I say it like this. Thou leadest us not into temptation, but delivereth us from evil. Which incidentally happens to be the literal translation from Aramaic into English. Without going through another language like Greek or Latin or something else. Thou leadest us not into temptation, but delivereth us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. And that's it. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. World without end. Amen. It is my business to do these simple things one day at a time to the best of my ability. And it's God's business to take care of it. Now my prayers are very, very simple. I told you how I changed the 11th step. Look, Dad, I'm reporting for duty. I'm going to move it around. I'm going to do the best I can with what I got today. And all I want out of you is a little guidance and direction to try to carry it out. And I've told you how I came to the line in the Lord's Prayer. Now I'm going to tell you how I changed the one in St. Francis' Prayer. So you Catholics won't get left out. I love this, you know. If we lost all the Irish Catholics and the Southerners in this organization, we could hold our international convention in a phone booth. Well, I love St. Francis' Prayer. I got it in my purse right now, my pocketbook. I've had it for at least 30 of my 33 years. I traded the poem Invictus for it. Invictus. Yeah. And it was a whale of a trade. And I love it. And I particularly love it. For it's better to love than to be loved. It's better to understand than to be understood. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. For it is in giving that we receive. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. In forgiving that we're forgiven. Alcoholics Anonymous. And in dying that we awaken to eternal life. Now, I didn't like that one. Because I didn't want to wait until they patted me in the face with a scoop to awaken to eternal life. And so I said to me, I know what the boy was talking about. He was talking about dying to self, surrender. That's it. It's exactly what he meant. And I said, that's the way I'm going to use it, dying to self. And then I said, wait a minute. What are you going to do with all those Catholics out there? You know, they say in dying that we awaken to eternal life. So I said, I better check this out. So I called Manresa. For those of you who don't know it, Manresa is a Jesuit retreat house out in Azusa. We've had the good fortune for many years of having some awful nice alcoholic retreats out there. Given by alcoholic priests and people that understood our program. And I've gotten a great deal out of it. Nothing. But anyway, I know the padres out there pretty good. So I called Manresa and I got old Father Toner on the line. And I love the little rascal. And I said, Father, listen to what I did with St. Francis is first. For it is in dying to self that we awaken to eternal life. And you know what that monkey did? He said, what the hell do you think he meant? Just like he had known it forever. And I still believe he never even thought of it till I told him. But why did I do this? I did it because I do this all the time. I constantly remind myself that in him I live and move and have my being. I might say, fear not, little flock, it's the Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom 100 times in a day. I might say, lift up thine eyes into the hills from whence cometh thy strength. I might say, take no thought of the morrow, what you sleep, what you drink, or wherewithal you should be clothed. The Heavenly Father knows what you have need of before you ask him. Why? Just to remind myself of the conscience. The conscious awareness of the living presence of the Almighty. It's because of this that you and I are alive in the first place. It's because of this that we're able to live one with another in love, sharing our experience, strength, and hope. Just because we want to. Because we love each other. And we love this program. And we love the eternal God that is the people in the program, and the program, and me. May he bless you greatly until we meet in another Easter meeting, which won't be but about that long. Because the years are getting so now. You say, Happy New Year. And then you say, Happy Easter. And then you say, Happy New Year again. God bless you. Thank you very much.